Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and you're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joe Hill is the New York Times best-selling author of The Fireman, Nosferatu, and the comic book series Lock and Key. He also has the same knack as his father, novelist Stephen King, for having his works adapted. AMC has turned Nosferatu into a series, and Lock and Key will be featured on Netflix. Hill's short story collection, Full Throttle, is no exception. Two of the stories were co-written with King, and one, In the Tall Grass, is already a Netflix horror movie. It shouldn't be surprising that Joe has such a cinematic influence. In the introduction to Full Throttle, he talks about one of his favorite films, a 1971 made-for-TV movie called Duel.
I love that movie. It was the breakthrough film for an incandescent young talent. You know, Steven Spielberg was 21 when he made it. He had great source material. Duel was based on a novella by Richard Matheson, who is sort of the grandfather of modern American horror. In some ways, he was Stephen King before there was a Stephen King.
Yeah.
Matheson wrote The Incredible Shrinking Man. He wrote I Am Legend, which has been, I think, filmed three different times. Duel was a novella he wrote in the early 1970s, and it's about an everyman on the run from a faceless truck driver who's persecuting him for unknown reasons. And it was made into a terrific picture.
Operator.
I'd like to report a truck driver that's been endangering my life.
In that case, I'll have to give you the police, sir.
Right, well, give me the police.
Sir, which department do you want?
Whichever's closer.
What number are you calling from?
This number is 9821.
You were only 10 years old the first time you saw Duel. What did you think of it?
I loved it. You know, it inserted itself into my fantasy life. My dad and I would go for drives, and when we were out for drives, we'd pretend the truck was after us. We'd talk it through, you know, about what we'd do and where we'd go, and, the, you know, imagine the truck rearing up to slam the back end of our car. And I did a lot of screaming and stuff, you know, acting my part.
Okay, you want to play games?
So in Full Throttle in the collection, there are two stories in the book. There's 13 stories in all, but I wrote two of them with my dad, and one of them is Throttle. It is a kind of reinvention of Matheson's Duel. That's a story about an outlaw motorcycle gang on the run from a faceless trucker who wants revenge on them for unknown reasons. And in some ways, it was like, you know, it was like we started writing that story when I was 8 years old. You know, we started writing that story playing truck in the car.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the story Throttle that you co-wrote with your father, it's kind of your take on Duel. It seems to me that whereas in Duel, we never learn why the truck driver is trying to destroy Dennis Weaver's character in his car, in your story Throttle, you've included some motivation for the truck driver's homicidal tendencies. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. Ultimately, there is a revelation. There is a reveal. We find out why the trucker is after them. That sort of goes back a little bit to H.P. Lovecraft had this idea that it was important to keep the horror off screen. You know, mm-hmm. that what we didn't see was more scarier than anything the artist could show. And I think there is some truth to that. I mean, like certainly Spielberg in Jaws, his happy discovery in the making of Jaws was that the longer we went without seeing the shark, the more frightened of it we were.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, and this is something I sort of picked up from my dad, I do think at a certain point it's worth risking it, that the reader does deserve some revelation, some understanding of what it was all about, and that maybe the monster does have to come out from under the bed. You do have to shine a light into the back of the closet to see what's hiding there.
Yeah.
So I guess in some ways, that would sort of be one of my dad's disagreements with H.P. Lovecraft's legacy. I'm sure there are others.
I'm curious about how the process of collaborating on this story, Throttle, with your dad worked. Can you tell me a bit about how you two approached that?
Sure, I can tell you what it's like to collaborate with my dad. You ever see any of those Roadrunner cartoons?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So basically, imagine Wile E. Coyote getting a box that says Acme on the side. And then he pulls apart the crate, and inside there's a rocket. And he lights the fuse and climbs on top. And the rocket blasts off after the Roadrunner. And Wile E. Coyote is hanging on top, barely clinging on for dear life. I've written with my dad on two short stories, and both times I felt like Wile E. Coyote hanging onto the rocket.
That's a great analogy. So a book of short stories can't have the same kind of flow that a novel can, but I'm thinking you must have given a lot of thought to the sequencing of the stories in Full Throttle. How did you decide the running order of the stories?
Well, I don't know how much strategy went into it, but you do look for some kind of coherent flow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a way, it's sort of like trying to put together an LP. You want one song to flow naturally into the next. I know that the first story in the book is Throttle, and that the second story in the book is called Dark Carousel. It's set in the early 1990s. And it's about four teenagers who deface a carousel, a big 19th century carousel, and then there are supernatural consequences. So Throttle was the first time I ever collaborated with my dad, and Dark Carousel is almost like a cover of a Stephen King story. You know, it's like the most Stephen King thing I've ever written.
Let's listen to a bit of Nate Cordry's reading of Dark Carousel.
The Wurlitzer began to play. A theatrical, whimsical, but also curiously dirge-like melody. Wandering amid the steeds, I looked at the creatures of the wheel with a mix of fascination and repulsion. It seemed to me a uniquely disquieting collection of grotesqueries. There was a wolf as big as a bicycle, its sculpted glossy fur a tangled mess of blacks and grays, and its eyes as yellow as my beer. One paw was lifted slightly, and its pad was crimson, as if he had trod in blood. A sea serpent uncoiled itself across the outer edge of the carousel, a scaly rope as thick as a tree trunk. It had a shaggy gold mane and a gaping red mouth lined with black fangs. When I leaned in close, I discovered they were real. A mismatched set of shark's teeth, black with age. I walked through a team of white horses, frozen in the act of lunging, tendons straining in their necks, their mouths open as if to scream in anguish or rage. White horses with white eyes, like classical statuary.
So I wrote Wolverton Station in a notebook while I was on tour for my second novel, Horns, in the United Kingdom. All the travel was done by British Rail. So I wound up taking British trains from London to Edinburgh and back with stops at Liverpool and Glasgow and, you know, here and there around the country. The first day on the train, we flickered through a station, and I only half caught the name of it. And I believe the name of the station was Wolverhampton. But, you know, I saw it out of the corner of my eye, and I thought it said Wolverton Station. And I thought, boy, what would you meet? Who would you meet if you got off the train in Wolverton Station? And instantly, you know, I mean, I'm a guy who grew up watching films like American Werewolf in London, you know. Yes. So I hear Wolverton Station and I immediately imagine a sleepy little British hamlet entirely populated by werewolves.
Mm.
And I thought that was such a fun little idea that I started writing it straight away. And I think I started writing it on my first day on the British trains and finished the story on the last day on the trains just as the tour was winding up. So that was a really happy writing experience.
Mm-hmm. And it's a really happy reading experience, too.
Oh, thank you.
The wolf's snout shriveled, and his black lips wrinkled to show the hooked rows of his teeth. He yawned, and a surprisingly bright red tongue lolled from the opening. And if there had been any doubt in Saunders's mind, there hadn't been really. That was all for it. In the next moment, he fought with himself, a desperate, terrible struggle, not to issue a soft sob of fear. It was like fighting a sneeze. Sometimes you could hold it in, sometimes you couldn't. Saunders held it in.
Are you an American?
Asked the wolf.
Don't answer, don't talk,
Saunders thought, in a voice he didn't recognize. It was the shrill, piping voice of panic. But then he did answer, and his tone was his own, level and certain. He even heard himself laugh. Ha, got me. Excuse, do you mind if I use the bathroom? As he spoke, he half rose to his feet. He and the wolf were in chairs that faced a spotted formica table, and he couldn't quite stand up all the way.
That, of course, was Neil Gaiman reading an excerpt from Wolverton Station. Another story that you wrote with your father is In the Tall Grass, and this one kind of struck me as Lovecraftian cosmic horror, sort of crossed with a bit of a Children of the Corn vibe in terms of setting. Is that what you and your dad were going for there?
I don't know what we were going for exactly. You know, we were both in Florida. He had just finished working on something, and I had just finished working on something. And we went out to the Colonial House of Pancakes, you know, at like 10 in the evening, and we're eating flapjacks or something. And we both agreed we should write a story. And so we came up with something on the spot and wrote the whole thing in about 6-7 days. You know, here we are a few years later, and it's going to be this big Netflix film. I think the drop date is October 4th. And it's really scary, you know. I mean, what a great film. It was directed by Vincenzo Natali. I mean, this is horror for horror fans. It has a feel kind of like a kind of relentlessly scary feel like Hereditary or It Follows. So it'll be interesting to see what people make of it.
Did Vincenzo consult with you and your dad about what he was planning on doing? Did you guys have any input into it at all?
Very much so. And, you know, he wrote the script himself, and I loved the script. You know, it was like a horror movie version of Inception that takes place in a meadow instead of in someone's head, because it does lots of tricksy things with time and space.
Can you tell us a bit about In the Tall Grass without, of course, revealing any spoilers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, In the Tall Grass is about a brother and sister, two people traveling across country from New England to California, Becky and Cal DeMuth. They're somewhere in the heartland, and they pull over at the side of the road because Becky isn't feeling too well. She's 9 months pregnant. They get out, and there's this giant field at the side of the road. You know, the grass is like 8 feet high. It's up over their heads. And they hear a child screaming in the field.
Help! I'm lost in here!
Did you hear that?
And so they both step into the grass to try to find him. And once they enter the field, they can't find their way out either. You know, they get separated from each other. And at one point, they're shouting to each other. Becky says to Cal, "Let's both jump up at the same time, and I'll see where you are, and I'll head to you." And they both jump up, and they can both see each other. They're about 12 feet apart. And they fall back down. And then Becky says, "Let's do it again. I want to be sure of my bearings." So they jump up, only this time they're 25 feet apart. Neither of them has taken a step, but they are drifting apart in spite of themselves.
Becky?
Travis?
In some ways, the movie is actually a little bit more hopeful. It finds some hopeful notes that are unique to the film. And I think that that's a good thing.
Yeah, we all need hope.
Yeah. And not every short story can deliver hope, though. I always feel like with a novel, you know, a novel takes anywhere between 12 and 24 hours to read a whole novel. And I kind of feel like anyone who slogs along that long deserves something at the end, some kind of uplift, some reason to feel like the world is not all terrible. I mean, they stuck with me that long. I want them to have something good at the ending. The short story works by different rules. That only takes one sitting to read. And a lot of the best short stories end with a final twist of the knife. And I do like that. I do like the ugly jolt of that final twist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. I crave the ugly jolts at the end of the short stories. Yes. It kind of seems to me, I want to get your take on this, it seems to me like we're kind of closing in on peak Stephen King movie adaptation right now. We just had It Chapter 2, coming soon is Dr. Sleep, your dad's adaptation of his sequel to The Shining. Why do you think this is happening at this particular moment in time?
Well, first of all, I don't know that my dad has ever really been out of style. Carrie just exploded off the shelves almost from the day of publication. Brian De Palma was filming the picture before the book even came out.
Yeah.
So there's always been terrific enthusiasm for his work. I don't think that's all that hard to understand because
no,
the books
not.
Themselves are highly cinematic and they have these big, fat, juicy, exciting hooks. You know, right now there is a content gold rush. And I mean, there are so many streaming channels and so many outlets and so much, you know, so many people throwing money around to, you know, buy up any property that they think could make a good film or good TV series, even a web series. I think when producers, when the film companies look at my dad, what they see is they look at Marvel, and they look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, Marvel's had 21 hit films, and the films are all interconnected with interconnected characters and themes and ideas in a shared universe. And I think when they look at my dad, they see, you know, all these stories sort of exist in the Stephen King universe, and that shared universe seems coherent and satisfying and like a lot of fun. Scary, but a lot of fun.
So, Joe Hill, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much for talking to me, man. I had a lot of fun.
Joe Hill is the author of the short story collection Full Throttle. He and his father, Stephen King, co-wrote the story In the Tall Grass, which is a movie available on Netflix. Learn more about Joe at WPR.org/beta.
He said that in the future, information would be communicated electronically in small snippets of word, text, and sound rearranged.
That he is the beat writer William S. Burroughs. Author Casey Ray tells us how Burroughs predicted the internet and how he served as a muse to many musicians. That's coming up on Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.